So imagine you're assigned a permanent group project.
Oh, that sounds like a nightmare already.
Right. Only this project isn't for school or work. It's for the literal place where you sleep, eat, and park your car.
Right, you share a driveway, you share the walls.
Exactly. And you share the rules. Everything is fine at first, but eventually the pressure cooker of community living starts to whistle.
It always does.
It really does.
Yeah.
Someone leaves a broken plastic crate sticking out of the yellow recycle bin, which actually happened in this exact case in September 2023, and suddenly years of quiet resentment just explode.
Yeah, people just snap.
The snap, you take them to court, you win. The judge tells them they were wrong. You feel vindicated until the judge hands you a bill for thousands of dollars.
Which is just devastating.
So today we're doing a deep dive into a fascinating, frankly terrifying legal decision from the Western Australian State Administrative Tribunal.
Right, from March 31st, 2026.
Yep. The case is Cooper and Krugnow, 2025 WASAT 140S. And our mission today is to figure out what happens after a legal dispute is won.
Specifically, who gets stuck holding the bill?
Exactly. So let's lay out the core conflict so you, the listener, can put yourself in these shoes. We are looking at a dispute within a strata plan called One Wilton Place.
Okay, so a shared community property.
Right. On one side, we have a resident named Erin Cooper, and she's later joined by another resident, Michelle Beecham.
Okay.
And on the other side, we have their neighbor, Lorella Krugnall. The original beef centers on two main things. First, Krugnall had been parking a caravan registration NGN 13181 on the common property.
And this wasn't just for a weekend, right?
No. This was from roughly 2019 all the way to 2025.
Wow, 6 years.
Yeah. And second, she was using her specific unit, Lot 1, for short-stay Airbnb-style rentals. We're talking less than 60 days at a time, running from 2021 to 2025.
I mean, in the incredibly dense world of strata bylaws, those are two major flashpoints.
Oh, absolutely.
Using common property for personal storage, like a massive caravan, and turning a residential unit into a revolving door of short-term guests, that fundamentally alters the day-to-day reality of living in a shared space.
It totally changes the vibe.
Right. If you buy into a quiet residential block, a constant stream of tourists dragging suitcases past your window well, it changes the nature of what you purchase.
Cooper felt exactly that way, and she actually won the first round. She took this to the tribunal, and the tribunal declared Krugnell breached the strata bylaws.
Okay, so a clear victory.
Technically, yes.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really interesting. The tribunal didn't actually order Krugnell to do anything else.
Right, no fines.
No massive fines, no enforced punitive actions, just a formal acknowledgement that the rules were broken.
Which leaves the winner with a very hollow victory. I mean, a declaration is essentially the tribunal pointing at a situation and saying, yes, that was a foul.
Right, like a referee.
Exactly. But it doesn't rewind the clock, it doesn't undo the daily frustrations. And most importantly, it doesn't reimburse you for the sheer amount of time, energy, and money you spent getting the referee to blow the whistle in the first place.
Yeah, winning a declaration is great, but, doesn't pay the bills. And this leads directly to the current dispute. Cooper wants cold, hard cash for her troubles.
And she didn't just ask for a generic payout, right?
Oh, no. She submitted a highly specific itemized invoice totaling $5,477.70.
That is painfully specific.
It really is.
Yeah.
So let's dig into the anatomy of this bill. She's claiming $4,402.50 paid to a consultant named Peter Munday.
Okay.
Then there's $1,760.50 in lawyer fees.
So professional fees make up a big chunk.
Yeah, but then she's charging $500 for lost income. Literally, days she had to take off work to attend hearings.
Wow.
And she even billed for her own time. She claimed 20 hours of prep time at $30 an hour, which is another $600, plus land gate search fees and printing costs.
The lost income and the personal hourly rate are crucial details to look at here.
How so?
Because they highlight the hidden tax of seeking justice. It's not just the filing fees, or the property searches. It is the opportunity cost of your life.
Right, your actual time.
Exactly. If you ever find yourself taking a neighbor to a tribunal, you might assume you can just bill them for the weekend you spent reading bylaws instead of going to the beach. Cooper is testing that exact assumption.
And wait, there's more. On top of that, $5,400-ish dollars for herself, she wants Krugnell to pay an extra $3,000 directly to the strata company.
For what?
She argues this is for the physical wear and tear caused by the short-stay renters in the common areas.
So she's trying to act as the enforcer for the entire community, not just herself.
Exactly. But honestly, the most dramatic demand isn't even financial. It's Order 7.
Ah, Order 7. This is wild.
It is. Cooper formally requested the tribunal to force Krugnail to write a formal letter of apology to the tribunal and all the owners.
On permanent record, right?
Yes. Outlining steps for future compliance. Kept on the permanent record.
See, this bridges the gap between legal restitution and emotional vindication.
Yeah, it feels very personal.
It is. A legal system is designed to dispense justice, but what Cooper is asking for in Order 7 is penitence. She wants public contrition.
Like making her stand in the town square.
Exactly. A forced apology shows just how personal strata disputes become. It's not a faceless corporation you are suing. It's the person you see checking their mail every Tuesday.
That is so true.
The psychological need to have that person publicly submit to the rules is just overwhelming.
But looking through this itemized list, I noticed a huge, glaring issue. She claimed $800 for two return flights to attend the tribunal hearings in person.
Oh, from Kalgoorlie to Perth.
Yeah, from Kalgoorlie to Perth. Wait, couldn't she just have used video conferencing instead of flying across Western Australia and demanding her neighbor pay for it?
That instinct you just had. That is the exact critical thinking the tribunal expects. Yeah. When someone hands you a bill for thousands of dollars, you scrutinize every single line. Krugnail fought back hard against these costs, and she highlighted that very point in her written defense.
So she brought up the flights, too.
She explicitly told the tribunal that Cooper could have easily attended via video link to save the flight money and the time off work.
Good for her.
Krugnail's defense is honestly a masterclass in dismantling an invoice. First, she points out that the original application Cooper filed was incredibly vague.
Like, it wasn't just aimed at Krugnail.
Right. It was directed at multiple people, not just her.
Okay, so it was a scattergun approach.
Exactly. So Krugnail highlights that the legal advice Cooper paid for was actually directed to the Strata company, not Cooper personally.
Oh, wow. So she's billing for advice that wasn't even for her.
Yep. Plus, that Peter Monday guy.
The consultant who charged over $1,400.
Yeah, he isn't even a lawyer. And his invoice didn't specify what proceeding it was actually for.
Wait, seriously? So she wants reimbursement for a non-lawyer's vague invoice.
Pretty much. And then we get to Krugnail's strongest argument, the misguided but approved defense.
Ooh, what is that?
She claims she didn't just maliciously ignore the rules. Rather, no written notices of breaches were ever formally issued to her by the Strata under Section 47, Subsection 2 of the Strata Titles Act.
So no one officially told her to stop.
Right. But even more crucial, in December 2023, the Strata manager gave her written confirmation that the council approved her caravan parking.
Wait, really? She had it in writing from the manager?
She did. What's fascinating here is how this highlights the messy reality of Strata governance. You're relying on official but incorrect advice.
Okay, let's unpack this. If the Strata manager explicitly gave her permission, why is Cooper suing the neighbor instead of the Strata manager?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. And it moves the discussion seamlessly from the emotional facts to the cold, hard legal framework of the tribunal.
But how does the tribunal actually handle this? What are the rules of the game?
We have to look at the underlying legislation governing this dispute. It's Division 5 of the State Administrative Tribunal Act 2004 in WA, specifically Section 87.
Okay, Section 87. What does the default rule look like?
Well, unlike some courts where the loser pays, Section 87, Subsection 1 establishes a firm starting point. Each party bears their own costs.
So win or lose, you pay your own bill.
Exactly. That is the default.
But there are exceptions, right? Because people do win costs sometimes.
Right. Under Section 87, Subsections 2 and 3, a party has to prove it's fair and reasonable to depart from that default.
Fair and reasonable. That sounds pretty subjective. How do they define that?
The tribunal member deciding this, Mrs. R. Petrucci, brought in some heavy-hitting case law to define it. First, a case called Questdale.
What did Questdale establish?
It established that costs are meant to compensate, not punish.
Oh, okay.
It also emphasizes the tribunal's core objectives under Section 9, which are fairness, speed, minimal formality, and keeping costs low.
But you can't use the tribunal as a weapon.
Precisely. And then there's the McClurry precedent. This one set out the specific bad behaviors that actually justify awarding costs.
Like what kind of behaviors?
Like acting unreasonably, deliberately prolonging the hearing, or bringing a weak or vexatious case.
So basically being a jerk during the process.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, The law is designed to discourage petty squabbles. It prevents the tribunal from being used to financially ruin a neighbor.
That makes total sense. But to play devil's advocate for you, the listener, the tribunal, already declared that Krugnell broke the bylaws. Doesn't that mean Cooper's case was strong? And by definition, shouldn't the winner get compensated for having to drag the rule breaker to court?
And that is exactly what tribunal member Petrucci had to wrestle with. It leads directly to the final verdict.
Okay, the suspense is killing me. What was the decision?
Application dismissed. Cooper gets nothing.
Wait, nothing. Not even the flights.
$0.
Wow. What was the rationale for that?
The tribunal ruled that just because Cooper won the declarations, it doesn't mean Krugnell acted inconsistently with the tribunal's objectives.
So winning the argument doesn't mean the other person was litigating badly.
Right. The tribunal noted that both women were self-represented.
Meaning no lawyers.
Yep. And both mostly complied with all orders on time. There was no bad behavior under that McCleary precedent we talked about.
Okay, but what about the fact that Krugnell technically broke the rules?
Crucially, the tribunal found Krugnell acted reasonably by relying on the misguided advice of the strata manager regarding the caravan and the short-stay rental.
The written permission.
Exactly. She wasn't acting maliciously. She followed the manager's guidance, so it was reasonable for her to defend herself in court.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about the $3,000 mystery, the money for the strata company? For the wear and tear.
Oh, that was dismissed too. The strata company didn't file any submissions or show any financial evidence of loss.
So they didn't bring any receipts?
Without receipts, the tribunal couldn't even consider it.
Wow. So what does this all mean? It's kind of like playing a sport where the referee tells you a move is legal, but later a league official says it wasn't. You might lose the point, but you shouldn't be fined for trusting the ref on the field.
That is a perfect analogy. You can't be penalized financially for the authority figure's mistake.
So Cooper leaves with a piece of paper saying she was right, but she's out over $5,000.
And no Order 7 apology letter either.
Right. The tribunal isn't going to force an apology, which leaves us with a pretty massive thought to chew on.
It really does.
This whole case reveals a massive blind spot in community living. We place immense trust in managers and councils to interpret the rules of our own homes.
You assume they know what they're talking about.
Exactly. But when they give bad advice, it's the neighbors who end up at each other's throats. They pay the financial and emotional price.
Well, the strata manager just keeps collecting their management fee.
Yeah. So the next time an authority figure tells you something is fine, you really have to ask yourself, who is actually going to pay for it if they're wrong?